Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Our guest today is Jim Gray. Jim Gray owns an artist services company.
He helps artists with things like management, marketing, promotion, distribution, all that. Check it out. If you are listening to this episode on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel, at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out performances with our guests. You can watch the podcast you are listening to right now as well. Help us out by subscribing, clicking the notification bell, liking those videos, etc. It helps us out a ton. Enjoy.
So a little bit of a, let's talk about personalities. Let's just start there.
Let's okay. do it.
And let's go this route. Let's start with you maybe. And let's go.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Let's start with like, are you introvert or extrovert? And what are you for business? Cause it's different.
Yeah. I think this is going to probably sound like a bit of a cop out. I think in my personal life, I can be both. I think there's times where I love spending time with people that I love. And in those situations, I can be a big personality. There are absolutely those days where I just want to sit at home and play guitar and not interface with that at all. I think when it comes to the business side of things, I'm probably much more the former. I'm a bigger personality because in a way it's sort of turning that on and acknowledging, okay, not in this sense, like not in the sense that there's cameras rolling and I feel like I need to perform, but just when, you know, Brian and I and Alex and I sit down and we've got to talk about stuff for the podcast or whatever it might be, I think that I probably bring more energy to the equation than other moments of life.
Yeah. For me, it's, man, it's a contradiction because sometimes in business, like I can turn on, you know, the voice and the personality and the, and I've got a lot of training. I've got, you know, a therapist, I've got an executive coach, I've got everything that somebody needs or should have, you know, if you want to be successful. I've got mentors and people speaking to my life. But when it comes to like my personal life, if I manage, my whole thing is energy management. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that I don't like people, but they drain me.
Yeah.
Right. I'm the same and way. So I'm that kind of introvert.
He's definitely in that camp.
I get drained for sure.
Yeah. And it's like, I went to a show. So I had a dinner Tuesday night, a show, Friday night, this today and some other and people in town and all kinds of stuff. And today, yesterday and this morning, I kind of just rested because I wanted to have a good reset for the week and plus be ready for this.
Yeah.
But, energy management's big. And then when I'm in the music business, I saw a quote today by Alex Hormozi that said, one thing that I learned a long time ago was that if you really care, you'll build more process. I would say I care deeply about people and process. I care deeply about people and what they go through. So I try to build a lot of process because I don't have the extroverted side that's needed sometimes to keep going. Mm-hmm. I've got to like, that's why everybody on my team, you know, everybody involved on some level is an extrovert or at least can play the part.
Yeah. So I can imagine too, working in this world with musicians, I would venture a guess and say that most of the people that you're going to be working with lean much more heavily towards that extrovert side. Just naturally by,
I think there's a huge benefit to being that way.
Yeah.
In an industry like this.
Yeah. And I'm sure that what you bring to the table sort of on the inverse of that probably does a great job of grounding the folks that you're working with and allows them to have something constant they can bounce ideas off of and that can maybe be a little bit more reflective, because we all know, I love my musician friends, but we're all a little crazy and there's a little bit of it can be a lot of personality in a room with a few amount of people. Do you find that, first of all, actually, before we even go down this rabbit hole, I want to know, give me some context on how you ended up in the music world here, because this is sort of an interesting place, I think, to end up for a lot of people.
Well, like a lot of people, you know, I ended up not coming from anything musical or creative at all. In my childhood, I was I'm a natural creative who happens to be a fairly decent, like, creative and nonfiction writer. You know, I've got some poems published and a chapter in a book and all this kind of stuff. And so writing is like my sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And I write every day, but I was, but the family I grew up in, my dad owned a logging company. So my dad, my grandfather, my great grandfather, my uncle, and my brother were all in the logging industry. They're like timber fallers or woods bosses or, you know, owners or whatnot.
So you're the odd man out here.
I am the odd man out. My dad made it really clear. He's like, son, there is no need or no place for creativity or daydreaming out in the logging woods. Someone's going to get hurt. And I was like, all right. But what he did teach me was how to work really hard. And that's been a real sweet spot for the most part. Like, mm-hmm. I walk myself through to make sure that I'm not being a workaholic in some respects. And then I was 10 years in Fortune 500 out of college. And then right after that, I went through some changes, and then I got a side job, like a side hustle, as a creative director.
Okay.
At a nonprofit. And then when Fortune 500 started falling apart, and, you know, somewhere in the 2008s or something like that, the market really crashed or fell through for some of the things I was doing. And I started consulting. I was like, man, I've got enough going on. I know enough about marketing and enough about how to manage people and process and other things. Like, I could probably do my own thing. So mm-hmm. I started a consulting firm. And then in the 2011 or something like that, I got hired by a record label that was based in Colorado and worked there for a while and met a bunch of people I would have never met had I not taken that. And it was, just to be like really transparent, it was an entry level job. Yeah. I was in my early-ish 40s or something like that. And had a family, but they gave us a relocation package, even, you know, packed up the house,
wonderful.
Got the full Monty with relocation and all that. And then I moved to Nashville at 50. I'm 56 now. And so a lot of the things I've done happened from 2018 until now, a lot of the bigger things. Mm-hmm. It happened when I just sat down and made a decision and said, well, I've got enough relationships in the music business. People seem to trust me. I have enough experience from being a public speaker and a whole bunch of other things that I think I can make this work. Now, there are some days where I'm looking at the profit and loss statement and the margins and the business and overall, and I'm like, is this the best business to be in? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But there are some days where I'm like, I'd like to... Usually it's right about the end of the year when I'm kind of fried.
Yeah.
Right around this time, I'm sort of like, do I really want to keep doing this? Right? I mean, we all do that to some extent.
Absolutely.
Because it's not, you know, music business is like, a good portion of it is like getting people to like write songs and get it produced and get it promoted and get it out there. And then all the touring stuff and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's constantly saying like, well, what else? And why isn't this working? And
Pardon.
Go ahead. But now we've got a company. It's called Gray Artist Services. And we basically do four things. We do artist management, artist development, which is coaching, a full creative agency, and what looks like a record label, which is mm-hmm. like a digital imprint.
Okay. So kind of going off of that, I want to know, when you decided to make that shift and you said, okay, I want to put something together here that can serve all those different facets of what artists need, how did you go about actually laying out the groundwork for that? Because, I mean, you rattle those off and those make complete sense. You think, yeah, obviously everyone would want X, Y, and Z, but how do you crack that code when you're starting and you're trying to build some kind of foundation there for artists? How do you actually go about starting to do that?
Oh, I sat during the pandemic in my very old 100-year-old duplex that I used to live in East Nashville behind Rose Pepper. And I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing but time at that point.
A lot of us did, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Some were more productive than others.
I at that point I was working a job for a creative agency as a writer and a strategist and a bunch of things like that. And as I was going through and trying to figure out how to build my music business, what I wanted that to look like, I was listening and asking a lot of artist questions. And many of them were saying, man, I want to get onto playlists. I don't know how to get onto playlists. I don't know how to meet curators. I want distribution. I need creative services at times, and I need advertising support. And there were a whole bunch of things they needed. But what I found the difference was between that the clear line that I need to draw in the sand about what was management and what was development was development was more for somebody that was or that is, they've got enough going on. They need advice, but they're not ready for management. They're not actually making any profit anywhere. They might be close to it. And then management, when I first moved to town, I felt like the substitute teacher, right? Where everybody's like, hey, I'd like for you to manage me. And I was like, wait a minute. And about a week into this, I'm like, this person doesn't have anything going on.
Yeah, it's just unneeded.
They want me to develop that. And like, hey, whatever you develop, I'll give you a percentage of it. I'm like, this is never going to work.
Yeah.
And
do you find, not to cut you off, but do you find that there's overlap there with those skill sets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not going to lie. It took a lot of courage to get to where I am now. It took a lot of courage and then just a lot of bravery to like stay at it. Mm-hmm. My biggest secret is not quitting, because there are some days where you're like, you know, in artist development and coaching, ideally I would love for those artist development clients to become artist management clients. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to keep them. Part of it is you've got to like acquire clients and then keep and then retain them. It's a business, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things I did during the pandemic was that I developed a partnership with another company, and they had Spotify and YouTube promotion services. And I just started selling that to, mm-hmm. and had I not been a salesperson, I wouldn't have made it this far.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, of all of those skills that you had acquired prior to getting into the music world, what are the ones that you find served you the best? What translated the best? I imagine a great many.
Yeah. Yeah. I use the term kinetic energy, where, you know, it's a culmination of things you've learned. So I'd say knowing how to communicate with people, mm-hmm. how to communicate well. I would say knowing how to manage profit and loss, knowing how to manage. So really managing people, money, time, and then marketing, and knowing the difference between marketing and advertising. So as much as I'm talking to artists about how much they need to be marketing and advertising, I'm doing marketing advertising for my own business. I mean, I consider this to be marketing and advertising, being on the podcast. And thanks for having me.
Of course.
I think a lot of the skills are transferable. The other thing was transferable was up until about 20 something. I don't know. It all becomes like one big date on the calendar. But I had a role as a senior level marketing person on a team. And one thing I was pretty sure was that there was going to be some management, that's a new word. There's going to be some management folks and some development folks that were going to do some of the things I did, but they weren't going to have my level of experience with some of the things I did. Mm-hmm. And some of the numbers I had, I knew that I just had to build the right formula, if you will, or the right setting, and then test that. I needed time to test it out, because a lot of what I had was hunches. What I didn't have was I didn't have tons of numbers, and I didn't have a portfolio. I had to go out and build. The first level of what I did was called folklore marketing.
Okay.
And I literally came to town, and I'd go meet with people and kind of tell them my story. And it's why I dress the way I do. It's what my hats, my shoes, the bracelets, the glasses, the beard, like it's all to be memorable. Because I had to prove everything. I had no clients at that point. Mm-hmm. I had to build this from scratch.
I love that.
And there wasn't, and I did not take, just to be really clear, I did not take any online courses. Mm-hmm. I did not have a coach. I did not have a mentor. I literally figured this out based on things that I knew from the, you had to be tenacious and scrappy and agile. And that's where really being the son of a lumberjack kind of pays off, because the one thing you know how to do is work really hard.
And to build that from the ground up, I imagine as frustrating and as, just mind-numbingly frustrating as I'm sure that was in the beginning, I'm sure that there was also just tremendous benefit to being able to go piece by piece in that way and say, okay, what works here and what doesn't work here. When you have artists come to you at this point, What is the process that you go through to determine what services that artist actually needs at any given time? Especially when, you know, I can imagine that a lot of the folks that you have coming in, they probably don't really know what's best for them, so to speak. And they may not necessarily know exactly. And that's probably part of why they're, I'm sure, coming to you, is they don't really know exactly where to put their attention, or where for you guys to put your attention. So how do you handle that with artists coming in now?
Yeah. So we're at the point now to where, I'm running anybody new through something I call the gauntlet. And this is like an Olympic challenge. I'm being facetious, but, and you'll find out.
You got to scare them a little bit. Yeah.
You don't really want to scare them, but you want to be realistic. And I found that it doesn't matter who the artist is. Like, you got to bring in everybody. For us in my team, we have to bring in everybody at the same level. Mm-hmm. Part of what we're developing now is, and we're doing this literally this week, is we have a discovery process. So it's a paid consultation. You sit with us, and we have I would call him a facilitator or a proctor, and he will walk you through. He's a musician as well, but he's a senior level creative director and a product manager. And we have him walk them through a discovery. So we learn the strengths, the weaknesses, and then in their overall marketing and their overall process, what are the bridges and what are the barriers in their existing business, and where could we come in and be an asset to them? And we're not even saying at that point we want them as a client, because we have to then sit down and have an actual meeting with them and review all that and be very direct and candid about all that information, and then say, based on this, would you be interested in working together? And then here's three options you can do that. Mm-hmm. Because for us, we've already proven that we can do that over and over and over again. I mean, since the pandemic, we've marketed about 500 songs.
So we've got the
data and the numbers, and we've had people come and go. And what works for me is, what I'm looking for is more like people. Because when I first started doing this, and these are great questions, by the way, when I first started doing this, it was all completely on the artist side of the table, because I had to prove myself. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, well, that's cute and cool, and I love that, but how is that actually going to work? Mm-hmm. And how is what you're doing right now with your music business make an impact? Are you getting new listeners? Are you getting new shows? Or is it all just, well, I'm here to write songs? And the other thing I found in the music industry is that people have different emphases. Some people are like, hey, I came to town, I really wanted a pub deal. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, or some people came to town and they're like, man, this is going to take me a while to figure this out. Cause you know, there's the kind of rule of thumb that it's a 10-year town, which has its own podcast now, which is a great podcast, by the way. But you have things like tenure town mantras. And then you've got some people that they just go and work a full-time job to figure it out, you know, cause it's, and then I ask, is like, well, is music a hobby or is it a side hustle? Or so some of that is like qualifying the overall, like we want to be holistic. Mm-hmm. And we want to be a business, right?
So for those folks that that do have that initial consultation, and you find, okay, this person checks whatever boxes might need to be checked to that we're interested. Yep. What do you find are the through lines between? Because I can only imagine that you have quite a variety of folks who have different interests and are looking for different things, like you said, in the music business. What do you find are the through lines between all of those artists that you're interested in working with?
Yeah. So right now the I'm gonna take a drink.
I'll go. We're on a roll here, guys.
Good. I want to know when Brian's going to ask some questions.
Oh man.
He's here for the comic relief.
I'm just kind of here.
He's like, I'm just the eye candy.
There we go.
Pretty
exactly.
much. Yeah.
And I'm like the bearded sage in the middle, or at least I play one on YouTube. All right. So what was the question again?
So of all those folks who come in, and you are interested in working with, what is the through line with all those?
Okay. So number one is your music, your song, you have to have great songs and great music, and you've had to have like proven yourself in some way. And then I would say, so it starts with great songs, and then Because we're going to put people in rooms with other people. Like, we have people on our team that are some are top liners. Do you know what a top liner is?
Yeah, we've talked to quite a few folks in the sort of songwriting business and that sort of thing.
So your audience probably knows what a top liner is.
If you could give them a rundown, that'd be great. Because I'm sure there's some folks who have no context at all.
Somebody who's going to come in that's going to help you write. It's almost like somebody would be like another writer who does this enough to where they're going to write the melody.
Yeah.
They specialize in the melody. They usually have a publishing deal, and they're working with a producer. So ideally what we're doing is we're looking for people we can put in rooms with the right people. And I, by the way, as I was doing this, I had a good friend of mine, came to me and said, or we were having a coffee one day, and he said, "Well, why are you as the manager, why are you putting people into rooms?" And I said, "'Cause that's what I thought we were supposed to do." And he looks at me and he goes, "Well, bro, that's what a publisher does." And he goes, "Are you a publisher?" And I was like, "Mm-mm." And he's like, "We need to get you set up with a publishing company." Because he goes, you're actually providing services that a publisher would provide. And he goes, you're probably not even charging for it. Mm-hmm. And so that's something else I had to think through. Much like an artist, it's like every day there's like a different piece of the algorithm or a different part of that. But anyway, getting back to it is like, we're looking for people with great songs that we can develop. And that's why I have at least two people on my team that have pub deals. And so that we can coach them through like great songwriting, writing with them. That all has to work out financially as well. So some of this is like, you got to talk through really candidly about what does this all look like? And then what's the financial plan behind all this? Cause everything that we do, it all takes money. Mm-hmm. Like the music industry takes money. It takes money to do things. So it's really about scope, schedule, budget. But I would say that the top thing is we're looking for great people who could write great songs that we could develop. And then inside of that, we have a lot of our own process. Like we have our own record label called Redwood Highway Records, where you get pitched to, you know, editorials on Spotify and Amazon and all that, Apple, all the things. So we're looking for people with great songs. I'd also say that we're also looking for people that have great work ethic, that have already proven themselves. And then the gauntlet part is more like, hey, I would love to work with you guys, but I'm not quite there. And it's almost like you're going to start off at more of a junior level, mm-hmm. where it's like, we're going to have like A team and B team a bit, because you've got to prove, you can't have everybody in the same bucket. Mm-hmm. And, so that's just artist development. I'd also say that we work with a lot of people that we advertise their music on both Spotify and YouTube, where we're doing playlist pitching or YouTube advertising, that are not our actual clients. They might be our repeat clients, but most of the time we've gone out and built a relationship with their music producer, and that music producer has referred their client to us.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to touch on that. I also want to talk about the label side of things as well. But before we get into that, prior to my current job teaching, I worked in publishing for a little while. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is that world, not just publishing, but the whole music world itself is changing so rapidly right now. Even in just the handful of years that this has been your world, how have you found that changed? What's the shift been? Have you found any patterns there, or is it just every day is a new puzzle you've got to solve?
I wouldn't say it's so much of a puzzle as what I look for is that, well, for me, in my business, we're investing our time, a lot of our intellectual property, like how we think and what we do and our relationships into somebody. So for us, that's why it really matters that somebody's on a 3-month, 6-month, 9-month or 12-month contract, mm-hmm. because we're trying to make a development process for them.
Okay.
And it's hard to do that if you're thinking about everything's temporary.
Yeah.
Because you at some point you're just like, hey, we're better off not doing this if you're not going to go any mm-hmm. further.
And I'm sure that's hard too for you. I mean, we're all human and we get invested in these things, whether it's a human relationship we're getting invested in, we want a good outcome for these people, or it's just you get dug in because you've thought, I've invested all this fucking time and energy into whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
I'm sure that has to be a skill set in and of itself for you to learn when to be able to really hunker down and keep at it, and when something just isn't working.
Yep. So the biggest, I would say the greatest, this is typical Jim Gray. I'm going to go ethereal on you for a second. Actually, the best thing that I can do to serve my clients is to be grounded every day. And so I do that through four things. I write every day, which is journaling. I walk every day. I lift weights every day, which you can tell how buff I am. And then I work every day. Even today I worked. Even I did all those things today. Because in order to serve my team and my clients effectively, I needed to be grounded every day. And so so there's like a mental part of it, because it takes some tenacity and some belief. Because for me, as being the lead, the team leader and the big boss, is like the one thing that people need from me is confidence. If that confidence isn't there and I'm not feeling it that day, chances are I'm probably not going to talk to a whole lot of people, or I'm going to be very candid with them about where things are. Mm-hmm. Because part of this takes a lot of like courage on both sides. And I try to, it's another word, it's not donate, but it's like, I actually have to project that courage onto the artist to help them believe in themselves, that like, hey, I see in something in you that you don't quite see yet. Mm-hmm. And some of that is like, you know, exchanging comfort with them. It's like, hey, I've been, you know, we've all been there, you know, and the business side, our business framework is pretty, in some ways it's set in stone. It's like, what, cause we look for is we look for the continuity thread between the song that was written and when it gets produced, and then it gets released, and then it gets, you know, all the lifetime of that song, because chances are you're going to be performing those songs before an audience, if you get that far, for years.
Yeah. What do you find, and this is just my own ignorance as to kind of your business model, but are most of the folks you're working with performers in some capacity, or do you have folks come in who, that are just interested in the songwriting part of things, where they're never going to be in front of an audience?
You're good. I think that, most people that are coming to us, they're already playing live, or, and some of them, at least one or two of them are fairly green, where they might've been playing out live, but they've never actually like looked at their brand.
Okay.
So everybody's coming in. It's a lot like, if you've ever been to Los Angeles and you've got like where the 405, the 101, and like all these freeways are meeting, and you got to decide which exit you're going to do, and what the GPS is telling you. And maybe, you know, you're dealing with, you know, who knows, traffic and all that.
Yeah, we're both from Southern California.
So, me too. So, and that's why I say the 101 to the 405 to the 5 when I'm living here, and I'm going to be like, you're going to take the 65. And they're like, why are you saying that? And I'm like, I can't stop.
What we do over there. Yeah.
I can't stop. And most of the time, though, also as a side note, I don't tell people I'm originally from California.
I keep that very.
Yeah. It's not like. Yeah. Although it depends on where they're from. If I find out they're from far northern Cal, I'm going to be like, yeah, we could probably be cousins.
Which part are you from?
So I'm raised in far northern California by the Oregon border. I went to high school in Mount Shasta.
Okay.
Very nice.
Yeah. And my dad lives out in the mountains west of Redding now.
Beautiful.
So, very nice. But yeah, to get back to it is like, I've learned that I had to become much more of a thinker to make all this happen. Mm-hmm. The business side isn't really that difficult. And really the sales side isn't that difficult. It was more about like sitting down and saying, what do we want to do? And what do we want to provide? And then what does a really good client for us look like? And then what's the journey that they want to go on? And do we have something to offer them in that journey? Some people, they're going to want more than, it's kind of like booking. Every artist needs booking.
Yeah.
And in the beginning I was like, I don't really want to be offering booking services as a standalone. We might do that to support somebody and help them recruit their own booking agent because there was a big need for that. But I didn't really see where we were going to make a ton of money off of like being a booking agency. There's people here and other places that already provide those services.
How did the record label come about? How did that side of things?
Yeah. So the record label came about because, as I was looking again at the continuity thread between the writing of the song and the producing of it, and then there were a lot of artists that were, they were, you know, using, you know, different distribution platforms of their own. I wanted them to make sure that not only were they getting get on curated playlists, but could we get them onto editorial, and then could they have like more marketing support behind them? And so I started vetting different distribution deals, basically. Mm-hmm. I looked at, you know, The Orchard. I looked at Sony Provident. And then I looked at another company based in here in Tennessee called Syntax Creative. And it ended up, originally I had one deal with somebody, and then, you know, the thing about deals is that it's, in my mind, it's always temporary until it's always, I say this a lot, is that it's all fiction until it becomes fact. Mm-hmm. You can have a contract with somebody, you can have an agreement with them, but if that never happens and it's a mess, then you're probably better to move on, or to have your lawyer ask, see if you can get out of it, or fulfill mm-hmm. the contract, whatever you need to do. But like, but I was looking for a way to help my clients have more longevity and have more exposure. And other, and the only way I could do that is I was like, well, could I get a distribution deal by not being an artist? And in 2023 I did. And I got offered a deal where, that company basically, I have the distribution deal, and so Gray Artist Services has the actual, offers the distribution deal to the artist.
Okay.
And so I think it, as of last week or something like that, we've, you know, distributed well over like 100 songs now.
Oh, I love that.
So
that's fantastic.
And it's become a big passion point. So that label is called Redwood Highway Records, because it represents where I was born, kind of born and raised, where my family's from. And I was like, why not take, you know, kind of the old and put it in with the new. And it's been beautiful. Some of the people that we serve now, we have that problem of, we have different types of clients, where we've got distribution clients, a management client, multiple marketing and creative agency clients, and then we've got distribution clients. Now, some of those are cross pollinating. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you just got to be really smart with, you know, the numbers and your reporting and all the transparency and all those things. And you got to put on your big boy pants and have like whole days where you're lost in administration.
For the folks who are listening, who may not have all the context for this, for something like playlist placement, right? Yeah. What is it that a service that you guys are providing, what is it that service can accomplish that an artist on their own, they don't have the ability to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. So we have two things. We have playlists that we've either acquired or built. Most of them we built through ads, our own ads, or we built through our own relationships. And then there's a whole, so it's basically a business to business type of model. And then we've got relationships with other podcasters. We're on a podcast. Playlisters, okay. Playlisters, podcasters,
yeah, same thing.
producers. It's the alliteration thing. But and we don't even have to edit that one out, because I know I'm on a podcast, but my mind is playing the P game.
If you could hear all the dumb shit I said, listen, you're fine.
Oh, yeah, outtakes. Yeah. I'll keep that one all day. But let's see. Okay, so and with playlisting, is that we started the playlist pitching because artists needed something, because the editorials are great, but then editorials are limited too. Mm-hmm. The curated playlists, listener-based curated playlists, sometimes had, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to kickstart the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Everybody's playing against the algorithm. I don't care if you're on Reddit or Spotify or YouTube or whatever it is, everybody's playing against AI now. And we have been for some time. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to, like, you know, it's like if you've got a lawnmower that isn't starting, sometimes you got to like spray some stuff on the carburetor or whatever. And you got to basically create what's called a choke to like help jumpstart it. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is we're trying to help kickstart the algorithm to help your overall numbers. And our goal is creating opportunities for monthly listeners.
Okay.
And so we do that by offering, now we're actually full transparency. We're only offering to pitch you. We're not guaranteeing you're going to get picked up.
Which, I mean, that's best case scenario. Yeah. Though. I mean,
And the minute I can do that, when I can start predicting the future, my prices will all go up, Brian. They'll totally go up. But our process is that we have to listen to the song and approve it to work it in our portfolio.
Okay.
So number one is the song has to be good enough for us to pitch to our relationships. Once it's approved, we give them a recommended, and we've got basically like increments of like 5, 10, 15, 20, you know, bundles that you can buy. And then based on that, once they make their decision, they're like, yeah, we're green light. We love it. My team loves it. Let's go. We send them an invoice. We schedule the order. And then we pitch on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And some weeks we're pitching like, you know, anywhere from 30 to 100 plus songs that night.
Oh.
And it's become a whole beast. But and then there's the reporting side of that where, you know, you'll see that the real time ads to those playlists, you'll see that on your Spotify for artists. And then at the end of that, we send you an actual like old school analog PDF report. Just be like, hey, here's everybody we pitched to and what any feedback they
That's
gave
great.
Us.
That's great.
What percentage of songs that you pitch would you say actually get picked up? Just curious.
I mean, I would say if it's like a, if we quoted it and they did the package we recommended, and if it's, let's say it's like a 10 song pitch, I would say if we pre-listen to the song, I would say on the most part we get, I wouldn't say 100% approval rate, but we get pretty close.
Nice.
Like we can get within like, very rarely, I would say there's like a 2-song decline, maybe one or two. It really depends because we're pitching to curators, and that's their baby. That playlist is their baby as much as my business is my baby.
Mm.
And then on the YouTube side, it's totally different where I want to see the song and make sure there's like, you know, you haven't, you know, shot or killed or maimed anybody or harmed any animals, or you're not using like explicit language and some things like that. Which gets really funny sometimes because, you know, depends on who directed the video and everything. It's really subjective, but, and then we've got YouTube advertising, and both are relatively the same pricing. Mm-hmm. But again, we're trying to offer like ancillary support. What I didn't know was that back when I first started doing this and in 20, about right around 2021, where I did, you know, I did almost 200 songs and videos that year, which is nuts. Like full record campaigns and stuff like that. Out of that would come longstanding relationships with producers and with artists, one of which we manage now, an artist out of Tulsa, Oklahoma named Grady Nichols. He is a pop and adult contemporary saxophone player.
Love it.
Which is a hard game to be in. And so he and I have been working together as of January for 4 years. I've been his manager.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So yeah.
What, I'm sure that this probably sways more to the country side of things, just given we're in Nashville, but, what does the variety look like in terms of genre that you guys are dealing with?
Oh man, it's all over the place. It is, I would say these days it's Americana, indie rock, folk, pop, adult contemporary, jazz. I mean, it's all over the place. And that's then, and I'm finding that I'm seeing all the genre bending with like folks that are doing like, country emo, like Lakeview. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's been a while around a little bit. I kind of dig it.
Right. Right. It's because it's a different level of things. And because you get that country has that familiar sort of, you know, almost familiar sort of sound to it. It's like very familiar, very laid back, very easygoing. And then the emo side is a little bit more of that, like, but this is how I feel about it. And, but I feel like we should have all these like YouTube shorts or Instagram shorts where we're like reviewing songs. That's a whole nother project, but, you gotta be careful having me on your podcast, cause we're probably walking away, like doing some business together or at least getting in trouble later. But yeah, the genre bending is real. And then, you know, always trying to think about like, what is, cause then we've got, you know, we've got a management client who does this. We've got multiple artist development clients. We've also got the CCM side. And then we've got a whole bunch of pop people. And then Americana songwriter, Americana is like this big bag of very diverse music sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that sometimes people will be classified as Americana when I'm like, I think they're really singer. Like they classify Chris Stapleton as singer songwriter or Americana, mostly Americana, but he's really sort of like, for me, it feels like Southern rock. But again, sometimes it depends on, you know, if you're listening that in the distribution system.
Yeah. And we're living in such a interesting time as well, where, I think due to the nature of the beast. I mean, we have all of this accessible at our fingertips. Yep. I mean, all of the history of recorded music is right there for you, which is, I mean, it's incredible. And so I think Brian and I have talked about this extensively, but even just the idea of genres themselves, obviously they're incredibly useful from a marketing perspective, but in a, on a sort of creative front, they're almost dissipating in a strange way because all of the prerequisites for what genre actually is are kind of going out the window in a weird way.
Oh yeah, it's a you know, we sponsor a writer's round at Bobby's Idle Hour on Music Row. Love to have you guys come out and play sometime.
That'd
Are
be
you
great.
An artist too?
I play guitar.
Brian is one of the best guitar players you'll ever hear in your life. He's a jazz guitar player.
But I'd love to have you come out and play in the round. And but I've seen it. We've had, you know, we're is in that partnership that we do. It's 615 Stories and Sound. I might have said that wrong, but it's fine. you can DM me and find out the information. But don't quote me on that. But we do it at Bobby's Idle Hour down in Music Row, and it's this last Tuesday of every month. And we've had, you know, folks in there that were like some of the original songwriters from Smash Mouth. We've had, like, you know, country, you know, songwriters that have just gotten their first like pub deal. And a bunch of people have written songs. You're just like, oh man, that guy wrote that song and they wrote that song. And then some people are just up and coming. And it's been super fun to get involved in the community that way. Because again, I would never meet all those people had I not been involved with the writers around.
Yeah.
You know,
Nashville is such a beautiful place because I think as much as folks can get frustrated, I'm sure, because it is the skill level here is so high. And if you don't come into this with the right mindset, it can just crush some people. But the flip side of that is you are constantly exposed to all of these people who work at such a high level that I think if you're willing to just, you know, take that beating, so to speak, there's so much you can learn. I mean, I even just going to, you know, any writers round that I've been to, any, even just like an open mic out here, whatever it is. I mean, I say this all the time to Brian, and I'm sure he's sick of me saying this, but you know, the guy bagging your groceries at Publix is probably a better guitar player. Like, it's insane.
Or that barista
exactly.
at Dose or wherever is, I'm like, I see people working at Dose or working in different coffee shops or all over the place. And I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Like I saw them at, you know, wherever. Yeah.
But I think there's something to rising to the occasion, so to speak, where some folks, they get into that situation and it can be very disheartening in a way because you realize, okay, even though I might have been the big shit and from wherever I was coming from, nobody cares. And I think for some people,
we care. We want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, but it's like, you gotta start. I saw somebody on another podcast this morning. Tay Lewis has got a podcast and he was saying that that's what his question he was asking. He's like, you know, it's like when you move here, you got to prove yourself all over again. Mm-hmm. And it takes some time. Like there's been people that move here, like they already had 10 years of experience moving here, but it's different moving here. And I would say too, that most of the people we're helping and most of the people we're coaching are outside of Nashville. Mm-hmm. We're helping a lot of people in the Midwest, New England, West Coast, because, you know, and we've had clients now that have relocated here.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you is, I kind of imagine that a lot of the folks that you work with are actually outside of the Nashville world. What do you think are some of the drawbacks of the Nashville scene here, if there are any?
Yeah, I think that it's still good to be here if you're focused. I think there's a lot more distractions and there's a lot more industries here now than
just music.
You know, 8 to 7, 8 or 9 or 10 years ago, and you know, probably the three of us were thinking about moving here, there was like a lot more, seemed like there was a lot more focus. I think now I would say move here if you feel like you can, you've got goals and you've got some revenue and some things. Now again, from my perspective, I only see what I see. And I'd have to actually leave the house to actually see more, but I won't. But I think that, like, you know, having some good contacts here, I encourage people to do trips out here more than I encourage them to move here. Now, there are some people that are already doing music full time somewhere else. And if they moved here, it'd probably take things to another level, but you still need to have a plan for things like, how are you going to, if you're making all your money off shows and you move here, you're going to have to supplement that income somewhere. Yeah. Or know that you can go back. I think a better plan is that the coming and going strategy. I see a lot of people from the West Coast and the Rockies and Midwest and New England, all that, that come and go from town. I think this is still one of the biggest hubs for creatives in the songwriting space. All that being said, there's a lot of songwriters great songwriters all over the United States and the world for that matter. Nashville, I think, just has the biggest collection of them. As to whether or not we're still fostering that community like we used to, I'm not really sure.
Yeah. And I think for something like, you know, if something is like this silly podcast, I think that this is a great environment for that because you can be in that central hub. Yeah. That being said, I think that if you do want to be a performer, if you want to be working outside of that, that jump in when you need to, that approach might have some real merit to it. And I mean, Brian and I, we met in college, so we've known each other a while now. And, you know, after that, it was really, okay, do we want New York, LA, or here? That's kind of the question everyone who is interested in getting into the music world kind of has to ask themselves. Or at least it seems like that was the question at the time. And both of us had spent enough time in those other places to be like, let's try Nashville. And neither of us had ever been here before. We came out to check it out just a few months before we moved out here, I think. And neither of us had ever been to Nashville before. And I do think, again, if you're doing something like this, there is immense value to it. If you want to make your living playing shows, that's not to say that can't be done here, but it is a lot harder.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Do you find that you deal with folks who kind of get themselves in that conundrum? Because you know, for me, for a long time, I could get to a dark place. Just as a person, I could get to a dark place. Luckily, I was able to turn things around in my life over the years. But when you're in an environment like that, where everything seems right there, but so far out of reach at the same time, that can really mess with people. Do you find a lot of what you're doing in a strange way is almost therapy for people to be able to express to them, okay, like you just got to stay on, you got to stay on track here. Just put your head down and keep going.
I would tell you, man, that like some of the best training I have is being a parent. Like I'm the parent of three, one 30 something and then two 20 somethings. And next year I'm going to be the parent of two 30 somethings, which is crazy to me, but,
well, congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
Beautiful.
I think, I got an early start, so, started and finished but I have three, you know, I have an oldest son who's lead singer of a band based in Denver. They've been together about a decade now.
What are they called?
They're called Post-War.
Post-War.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And, Post-War Denver. And, they're constantly, you know, playing shows and all of that. And I'm a big fan of their sound and their music. And then my daughter, who's the middle child, she's an actress based out of Indianapolis. And then my youngest son lives here in town and is a, you know, somebody's trying to figure out what he's doing with his music and writing songs all the time. And fortunately for him, he lives in a house where, you know, they have a recording studio in the house.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
He's able to just go down there and write
awesome.
Songs. And I mean, how great is that?
That's
right.
Great.
And he actually started off as doing EDM music. We bought him Fruity Loops when he was in high school.
I love that.
And he disappeared for like 2 weeks during Christmas break and came out and was like, hey dad, listen for the drop. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I'll just fake it. But, and he's now doing EDM pop. And then there's some country in there. The oldest one is a little bit more like, post pop or punk pop or post punk. I don't know. It's a big variety, but yeah, I would say that being a parent of three creatives was probably the best training for as far as the people side. And then there's five questions that I ask, you know, when I started off doing part of what I do now about 5 years ago, I started asking people five questions. It was, where are you thriving? Where are you struggling? What's confusing? What's missing? And what's next? It was almost like, what do you feel are the gaps in your business or your thinking that's affecting your business?
And, is there one of those that seems to be the most common between artists or?
I would say that the thriving part they're going to struggle with because, you know, everybody wants to talk about what they do, but they're a little bit scared of it, I think.
Yeah.
We're all scared of compliments at some level. Even I am. Like somebody's complimenting me yesterday and they're like, can't you just take a compliment? And I'm like, no, I can't because I'm an overachiever. Always have been my whole life. But for people that are high achievers, they fear the gaps, right? We all fear the gaps. We fear to sit down and have a candid conversation about our finances, our money, our relationships. We don't want to, we'd rather like look on social media and find a meme or something that's going to, or some post that's going to magically solve our problems. And we're like, man, I did that and that changed my life. It's like, no, hell no. But what I find is that there's the idea of like in fitness about doing the reps. And it's probably the fact is that you might have a really great idea and a great amount of passion, but you haven't had enough reps yet. Mm-hmm. You haven't actually done it time over time. It hasn't been tested. And I have a mantra. You'll find that Jim Gray is full of mantras, but and one of those is, let's not confuse enthusiasm with priority. It's not bad to be enthusiastic, but you got to have your priorities straight too, because what's going to really matter is when the enthusiasm is going to go away. The point of the mantra is that when the enthusiasm goes away, you got to have something that's going to ground you when things get dark, mm-hmm. or you're out of money, right? Mm-hmm. The money part is a big part of just helping people, like, hey, can you actually afford this? You know, you might not be able to do this package. You might want to really do this package, but it's going to be a stretch for you. Maybe you're better off to start here and you can work your way into other things. And we have quite a few clients that have, like, you know, regular jobs, mm-hmm. you know, and they're, but they're
imagine
also,
that.
And they're also, oh, right. And they're also doing their, yeah, that's like you, it's they're doing a full-time job. Some of them have full-time jobs, families, you know, aging parents, and then they've got their music business. And so, but yeah, there's that, to answer your question, there's that kind of that therapy part, kind of that dad part, mm-hmm. The Uncle Jim part. It helps to have a white beard sometimes. I probably, probably got the white beard from answering some of those questions. Uh-huh. But I also find that, you know, sometimes we become neurotic because we get lost in our own thinking, mm-hmm. right? We become like anxious, afraid, or whatever, because we might be really super talented and great songwriters and great performers, but like, there's an awful lot of things that we spend our time thinking about. Like, I keep seeing this meme constantly about, you know, artists having to be content creators. And it's like, really, guys, like, we've been having to create content now for a few years. Like, just make a plan and fucking just do it.
And stick with it and just do it.
Just fucking do it. I love saying the F word. I mean, I was raised in a logging family where the F word was like, you know, eating your Wheaties every day.
That was a decision very early on when we started doing this. We thought, you know what, this is going to be as candid as possible. One thing that I also, just kind of piggybacking off of that, wanted to ask you about, all of the business stuff aside, and I'm sure that when you're in that world, you have that business cap on. What does it feel like as someone who is a father of three creative people? This might seem like a strange question, but what is it like when you really enjoy the stuff that those kids are making on a creative level? What is that like for you? Cause that's something that I don't have that. Obviously I don't have that experience. Yeah. So what does that feel like for you? Cause it seems like it's a kind of across the board with what your kids do. What is that like to actually not just be, I'm sure, immensely proud of those people, but to actually really have a passion for the thing that they've made?
Yeah. I would say it makes you feel good. I'm very grateful I got to be a dad. It's one of my biggest, like, there's pictures. If you guys ever come to the office, which you should sometime, I've got pictures of my kids all over the place because it was like my early sources of creativity, inspiration. They were always around when those things happen, the early nucleus of all this. And it reminds me of like why I keep fighting every day to do this, even though now I'm a single empty nester, you know, living in Nashville and doing my thing. But what was the question again?
No, what is that like?
When I see them achieve things, I'm like, man, love what you guys are doing. And like keeps and inspires me even, mm-hmm. because I'm like, there's days, a lot of days, especially towards the end of the year, right around the holidays, I'm about fried. I've had so many meetings and answered so many questions and been on so many podcasts and other things. I think I have one more podcast interview this year and then I'm done.
I love it.
But seeing them do things, I would say that there's definitely proud dad moments, And, cause like my daughter, you know, is very active in her church and she's like, you know, active in the local community theater and just had like a lead role. And then, you know, youngest son is performing music and he was played at my writer's round that I sponsor a couple months ago. And
oh,
I was
fantastic.
Just like, man, how cool was that? Just to have that moment. And oldest son just is doing his thing. He's kind of a beast, but, to see all that happen is really cool. And I explained to a friend of mine the other day that when my kids were younger, it was like you could see your creativity like seeping out through you and coming into them. And they were just trying to like figure it out. Mm-hmm. You're watching them learn and figure it out in real time and testing it out and having conversations about that. Had I gone back and do it all over again, I think I would have spent more time just, I think we already invested a lot of time and energy into them, but I think I would have thought more about like, you know, now it's like, if I made a bunch of money, I'd want to like give both my sons like an EP or something, yeah. You know, and give my daughter some, you know, it's like, I'd love to gift them something. And, most days I'm just trying to figure out like, what am I going to eat for dinner?
Yeah.
I mean, that's even tonight I gotta, you know, I'm probably gonna go have tacos cause that's the easiest thing. Yeah. But, that's the age old question about what are we going to eat for dinner? But, that's how real life is. But man, there is a sense of pride there. And also think it encourages me to keep going with my own mm-hmm. personal creative ventures. You know, the music business can, you know, encompass your whole life and kind of like, you know, kind of swarm you with a lot of different stuff and the overthinking and all that. And, it's like the week of Thanksgiving. I'm going to take most of the whole week off just to rest and not work.
See, but we're all in luck because soon AI is going to run all this for us. So we're not.
Man, fuck AI.
What are your feelings? I mean, obviously we're now living in an interesting moment where we've had AI seemingly drift into the creative world in an unprecedented way. How do you feel about all of this?
Man, I think, I think that a lot of the things that we were doing, I mean, I think people in using AI, like they've been using Suno to write I've seen a lot of people using it to write demos, right? I think that in some levels it's good. It's really crazy to me where it's like this advanced search engine. I think a lot of us were thinking it would be like Star Trek where you'd walk up to the bridge or whatever, like Captain Picard and be like, you know, Enterprise, tell me what is for dinner tonight, next week or whatever. And they would be like, well, you know, so, and it's like, no, actually you've got to train it. It's got to learn how you think and what you do. And, so I think though, it's going to get, there's probably some things being developed at a level, but here's where I'm at is that when I look at something like, whether it's a dating app or Facebook or Instagram or whatever, it's software that somebody built with investors' dollars, and they've got to prove and develop these things mm-hmm. and it's got to turn revenue, which sounds familiar because I'm in the business. And it's not surprising to me that people developed AI to do things that they're like, man, I never imagined it would have done that. But like, we're seeing the consequences to it. And, I did some research on, I was looking at some articles today about, you know, cause there's this new country artist, apparently the artist and the song, like the whole project is all AI.
Yeah.
Based.
That's what I hear.
There's a lot of stuff out there and Spotify has been like pushing it hard. Like,
yeah. Cause there was that first album, or at least the first one that kind of broke into the zeitgeist a few months ago that we were talking about on here. And now it seems like the floodgates are close to open, which
actually canceled my Spotify membership because they kept recommending the AI shit. And I was like, I'm out. No.
Oh, I've heard that there's like entire bands. I saw one a couple months ago that was like an entire band that was all fake.
Yeah. I think that's probably the one we were looking at. Yeah.
And it's a weird thing because if we're comparing our data, you know, Spotify is like the only platform that bookers look at. They're like, well, what are your Spotify numbers? And then what are your YouTube numbers? And then, you know, have you sold? How many shows have you done? And mm-hmm. all of that. Well, a AI band is not going to go out and perform.
Yeah.
So how is that going to affect things? And then there's the whole intellectual property side of, you know, fake songs and all of this. And so I think we still have to do our due diligence. I did see an interview a couple months ago by a lawyer. I can't think of his name. It was on the 10-year podcast. He had a lot of great things to say about it. I would say we're all going to have to be very up to date on what's what and what affects our areas. And then, but I think that like the problem is that some of these companies, it's kind of like when something happens and somebody wants to boycott, I don't know, whatever, Walmart, Target, or JCPenney's or whatever your thing is. People do the JCPenney's thing, but, you know, it's like, is that really going to make a difference, or is it better? Like, how does this affect my daily life and me and my associates and my podcast and my periphery and my friends and my projects? I think when it starts affecting things closer to home, then it becomes a little bit more dangerous. Yeah. And, but I was having a cigar about a month ago with a friend of mine, and he was, and this is a guy who's like, you know, written some songs, written and produced some stuff that's out there that's really good, that's like kind of legendary, and he's part of an institute as well, and he's using, you know, guys like that are using tools, AI tools, to help with demos. Mm. Now, it used to be back in the day, I'd say back in the day is like 3 to 5 years ago, you'd pay somebody $300 to make a work tape for you.
Now, when you say to make demos, is that okay? You're using this to make beats and to
make like a well produced scratch track, if you will. Okay. It's basically like a work tape.
Yeah.
That a demo that you could use, be like, let's say the three of us were going to work on a project together, and you're like, hey, I did this demo. You would use AI software to do the demo, because it's going to cut off the time involved with. Now, you still got to tell it what to do, and you got to give it, you still have to do this, give it the scratch track, but it's basically going to make a work tape.
That's where I think this stuff gets interesting. And I mean, we could so easily go down the rabbit hole with all of this, but, AI in that capacity, I see in many ways is just another tool in the tool belt.
Yeah.
I mean, whether that's the invention of the piano or whether that's the technology used to do something like that, in my mind, there's sort of no way around that. And I think, and I'm sure that there are going to be incredibly creative people who can use that in interesting ways. Where for myself, it gets strange is when the human creative process is out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And whereas, you know, we're getting to a time now where these algorithms can take in all of this input of what is successful out there? What is getting the most streams, most plays? What are the melodic hooks or the lyrical content that works for people, and can distill that down to something that is, I mean, by definition, not art. I mean, it's something, it doesn't mean that that's, you know, some kind of sin against man, but it is by definition not art. So that's where I think this is going to be very interesting is I don't think there's a way beyond that. I don't think there's a way where we can, I don't think
there's way around
there's it. There's no way around it. I don't think there's a way where we're going to live in a world where that doesn't exist. So I think what I'm most fascinated about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is how are we going to move forward in a world where we know that we're inevitably going to have that, and then we're going to have artist-driven creative output, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you see that world unfolding?
Well, I think that for me, it's going to go back to, in my world, where I think there's two answers to that. One is, as far as the industry, you're going to have to be much more self-educated about some things. And I just started using AI recently, like chat and all that, like to help me with some research things. Being a writer, though, and an editor at times, you know, I don't need AI to write me something. Mm-hmm. Like, I can write a version of it and have and edit it. Maybe I could have it edit it, but I was already using whatever software for that. That's like a grammar and editing software. But Grammarly.
Okay, yeah.
Tools like that were already available like 3 years ago. But I think that like on the industry level, it's going to offer some challenges as far as like where it affects me and my business and my team and my clients. I think everybody's going to need to have a plan for it, or at least like I've had artists ask me recently, like, hey, you know, what is the industry saying about Suno? And I'm like, well, there's this thing called Google. You can go look it up. or you could ask Chad about it. But having, you know, having some different options about what are the pros and cons of using it. Mm-hmm. If you go onto like LinkedIn, and there's a huge music industry has a big collective of people on LinkedIn, but again, it's like finding sources that have done things that have tested. I'm more interested in sources that have like we done a case study and we tested it out and it did this.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in learning that than I am like learning everything from scratch. I'm not going to get any younger. I don't want to learn everything over from scratch again.
Smart man.
Right. I only get to have this white beard once apparently, there but, but yeah, I think that like learning is a big part of it. Listening to podcasts, like not, don't run from it. Cause it's not going to go away.
No, absolutely.
And if you have a problem with, like if you need, I would just say like, if just go and like do your research on it, ask a friend, you know, you can direct message me on Instagram and ask me questions and my team and I could help you answer those kind of things. But it's like, those are the kind of questions that, over the next, you know, 1, 2 to 3 to 6 months to a year that I'm going to be making content about regularly, either on my YouTube or Instagram or somewhere like that, because what I'm finding out now is that there's a ton of questions. In fact, most of the time I find there's more questions than there are answers, or where I'm getting the same, or nobody's listening because they're asking the same questions over and over again.
Well, it's just a strange time to be, one, it's a strange time to be alive, but it's a strange time to be wanting to work in that world, because all of a sudden now something's on the table that I personally don't think you're ever going to get away from, that human desire to hear something that another human being has made, whether it's a painting, whether it's a song, whatever it might be, you know, on a sort of very basic nuts and bolts level, you know, I can imagine that AI will be able to do just about anything.
Yeah.
But I also know that it took John Prine to write a John Prine song. Mm-hmm. And it takes those people to be able to look at the world through that lens. Yeah. And again, that's not to take away from where AI, I think, will inevitably go. We're going to get to a place, I think, where it's going to be very strange very quickly. But just yesterday, we lost one of my heroes. We lost Todd Snyder. That's a big loss for the world.
Yeah. So I'm a little, full transparency is that I didn't know who Todd Snyder was now. That's actually not that unthinkable, because I didn't even know that much about John Prine, because think about it. I'm not a musician. Now I've worked in the music industry, but I only started in 2011. So there's a lot that I didn't know.
Oh, for sure.
And I've also learned to like not say those kind of things, but another part of me is like, well, I don't have anything to prove. But I've made a lot of friends, like a friend of mine who's got a great podcast called the Morse Code Podcast, Corby Lenker, wrote an article this morning on a Substack, and I read his story about interacting with Todd, about how Todd was supposed to be on a show just in like the past couple of months, and then like never made it to his front door. He made it to his front door, but like never called him or anything.
Yeah.
And never got on his podcast. And then another friend of mine, Amy Spies, who was reflecting on that. And I'm seeing other people on threads and places like that reflecting on it. And I really didn't know much about John Prine and some of these people, but when it came to people like, you know, the Beatles or Springsteen, like I just watched have you guys seen the Springsteen movie?
I have not.
The biopic. No. It's pretty good. Yeah.
Good,
it's dark for sure. And it talks about how he wrote his record, Nebraska.
Yeah, great record.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty dark. Like when you look at the source material for Nebraska, like he was watching a movie about a guy who's like a traveling serial killer, and that's where he gets his inspiration. And, I think though the problem was that it competed with the Dylan movie a bit, or at least they say that. But there's also like some, you'd have to know, it's like watching a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie. You'd have to know like the canon of Star Wars or Marvel when you see a new movie, and like when you watch the Captain America and the Red Hulk or whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't need to do homework before I go see a movie.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need I need like the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of education. I think in my mid-50s, like still learning, the ability to learn and the ability to like ask people for advice and having mentors and advisors is huge. And if you can't afford a coach, go find a mentor, like go ask questions, like be curious, like don't give in to fear or anxiety. Like, the whatever brought you to Nashville, it's still inside of you. You just got to like revisit that and then sit down and say, all right, I made it this far. What have I learned? Every day when I wake up, I express gratitude every day. That's for whatever's happened in the past 24 hours, like great coffee, great food. It better be great coffee. You know, being on a podcast, making new friends. I think mindset's everything. I say a lot of times that, you know, gratitude sets my attitude. And I think a lot of us just need an attitude check. You know, we probably just need to like, or we need to go to therapy, or we need a vacation, like,
or both.
So on the whole nother level, I have like a, it's going to sound like I was in a recovery program, and maybe I am. It's called HALTS, and it's, am I hungry, angry, lonely, tired, sick, or stressed about something? Mm-hmm. Most of the time I need a nap or I need some food. Right.
Yeah.
And that's, but you know, therapy has also been like one of the biggest tools I've used. I don't think that any of those tools by themselves are good enough. You still got to do your own work, like the hard work of sitting and thinking and not letting others make your decisions for you,
yeah,
regardless of who you are. If you've got a manager or an artist development coach, like, you can't rely on those people to make all your decisions for you. They're there to be guides. You're Absolutely. There to be the hero. So you got to do your role.
I love it. I love it. Well, I got to say, I'm so happy we had you on. I know this has been a long time coming.
Dude, we had like,
this has been
like, like sickness and travel and who knows what, but
no, I love it. I love it. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
Cause
as we establish, you're a busy man, and this was a ball. I love getting to pick your brain about all this kind of stuff.
This is so much fun. I want to just, for the record, I just want to say that, that I'm fully clothed and not in my workout clothes. Usually at this time of night, I'm watching like a football game. And ready to eat dinner and probably have had a nap by now, but super fun. I really appreciate you guys having me out.
Yeah. Fantastic. You're
Thanks
welcome.
For coming on.
Yeah, come back anytime. Yeah,
I'd love to come back and we can talk about AI again and how messed up things are.
Oh, it's only going to get crazier, guys.
Get the
it's
AI
only going to get crazier.
In a couple of years.
Yeah, there you go. Only going to get wilder. Well, thank That's you good. Very much.
Thank you.
How'd I do, Dad?
That was wonderful. I really, really had a ball. That's the coolest part of this.
Oh, yeah.
I was bringing about all this good stuff. Yeah. Oh, actually, can we grab a couple pictures with you?
Yeah, absolutely.